Hey folks, welcome to the Cyber Task Force podcast. This is the show about everything cyber, from embracing innovation to cybersecurity and everything in between. We can go from the very, very dark to the brightest of bright topics, so listener discretion is advised. This is your host, Paul Dwyer, and on this episode, I'm going to talk to Dave Feenan, Manager of Technology Ireland, ICT SkillNet, about everything in relation to cyber education. So if that's something you're interested in, great, keep listening.
This episode is sponsored by CyberPrism.com. CyberPrism is an award-winning platform that allows you to measure and manage cyber risk in a really effective way. More about that later. And now on with our show.
So, Dave Feenan, come on down. You're my latest guest on our podcast, and you're very welcome. For those of you who don't know Dave Feenan, Dave Feenan is the manager of Technology Ireland ICT SkillNet. He's an accomplished business person. He was the Irish country manager for both the UK and a USA organization, and he was involved in an MBO. He was also involved in a SaaS startup back in the day. And many of you, of course, would know Dave from his network of the Irish Software Innovation Network that was recently renamed to Innovation Forum 2017. But look, enough about the background. I know we're going to go in and out of that, Dave, as we pepper through the conversation. It's been a little while since we had a good chat, and I thought it might be a great opportunity during the month that is Cybersecurity Awareness Month to talk about your mission, what you do at Technology Ireland ICT SkillNet, and tell us a little bit about what's going on there at the moment.
Well, first and foremost, Paul, thank you very much to connect back up with you. I say it's been a while, but quite a lot has changed, and in the current environment, we find ourselves almost with a new dichotomy as to what lies ahead. So I suppose rather than looking back, let's look forward and let's focus on the world that we are now faced into and what that actually means for industry, what it means for us as citizens, and also the vast array of programs and courseware that we within the ICT SkillNet are continuing to afford to individuals the opportunity to embrace. So obviously, you know, the month that's in it, our cybersecurity framework has quite a number of touch points. Like later this month, we will be hosting a webinar on our new launched cyber risk officer course. There will be a capture the flag event. We are providing access to individuals free of charge to our Cisco Academy, which we are a affiliated partner. So there's a whole host of modules in there that people can access for free. And we have just launched a master's in applied cybersecurity, which will commence in January of 2021 with the National College of Ireland, which is a fully online course. So therefore, geographically, it doesn't matter where you're based at the moment. As long as you can plug in, have a web browser, you're good to go. Well, probably the biggest initiative over the last couple of months on our part, Paul, which was only launched 2 weeks ago, was specifically focused at the unemployed and those less fortunate than ourselves, which, you know, in truth, a lot of people in the technology sector, cybersecurity sector, and those supporting sectors have been a little bit immune to. If you look at our colleagues, our family out in hospitality or retail, they are struggling. They're struggling in a big way. As a lot of people have been made redundant. Many more others are facing into maybe a bleak Christmas period for a variety of reasons. So we, through funding from SkillNet Ireland and through the Department of Higher Education, the new Simon Harris department, we have put together a brand new framework that has 7 dedicated skill paths for people who are currently unemployed. So an individual now has a choice over a 6 to 9 month period to undertake one of these skill paths. They all have industry certification. It will all include industry mentoring as well. And one of the skill paths actually is in cybersecurity. So they will come out with industry certified cybersecurity qualifications. They will come out, if they take the networking pillar, with networking qualifications, or the cloud pillar, a mixture of Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS certification. So in essence, they're going to be very employable. And the good thing about this is completely free for everybody. that is currently unemployed and wishes
and Dave, firstly, it sounds like you guys have been so busy. It's unreal. I mean, I was in doing research for our, I'm preparing for a podcast today. I was so impressed by the amount of activity that's going on in technology around ICT SkillNet and specifically around cyber. And obviously the ICTTF are working with you guys on some of those aspects as well. But this almost seems like a personal mission to you around the unemployed, that this package, the way it's being presented, is almost, look, guys, you're in a situation, here's where you start, here's where you reskill. That's what it came across to me when I looked at it. I was really impressed by it. Is that in essence what it is? It's a journey people can go on into the various aspects of cybersecurity?
Yeah, very much so, Paul, because like you must remember that at the end of the day, people who are listening to this podcast, you know, they are mothers, fathers, you know, they have sons, daughters, they've nieces, nephews. They might be aware of a next door neighbor who is challenged and needs to pivot on their career. You know, we all are faced with certain obstacles in our lifetime. And if there's a framework there where industry comes together and says, working with a skill net, working with academic partners, working with other industry and government stakeholders, we can actually make a difference. You know, point out a person to me who would not go on that journey. So the difference, Paul, I suppose, around that is I'm actually blessed with the team I have. Mm. It's a shared vision. And the shared vision steps out beyond the team into the wider ecosystem.
Okay, so that was going to actually use that phrase ecosystem, because it sounds like you guys have put together, you and your team have put together this ecosystem at all different levels. It doesn't matter where you are in your career path. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but if you decide you need to retrain, reskill, you want to move over into that cybersecurity world, there's a hook point for you somewhere potentially that you can come in and it's free and it will bring you through to support industry and everything else. Is that in essence what this is?
Yes, in essence, you are correct, because a number of the programs, a number of the workshops we do are free to participate in. Mm. Others, like, say, the Masters in Applied Cybersecurity, yes, there is a cost, but that cost is grant-aided. It's a very, very attractive price. It's not the full academic program cost. If you, as an individual, were to apply directly to an institution to undertake a cybersecurity role,
or skin in the game, they put some skin in the game. You guys help them, but you're not a handout; you're a hand up, so to speak, in relation to supporting their career development and their path and the way it goes.
Yeah. So the big point that I need to make is the program content is dictated by industry, Paul. So we sit down with industry, and the question we would ask is, if you had an employee by the name of Paul, or the name of Dave, or Rhonda, or Natalia, if you were to put them on this master's program, or if you were to put them on this 6 months program, what competencies, what capabilities at the end of that program would you expect them to have? So that when they return to your employment, they're able to apply those immediately. So it's not a case of us saying A, B, C, and D should be in the semesters, and you know, ideally this is what the program should look like. We spend an awful lot of time talking to industry, understanding what their needs and wants are, getting a finger on the pulse feedback from them, because we haven't got all the answers. Like, and this is where the ecosystem and the partnership works.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like the catalyst, if you like, for it being much more effective. Because if I'm being honest, if I was to go back even 5 or 10 years and I looked at taking people to hire them for various roles out of a pure academia level, especially in the world of cybersecurity, it was almost useless, an awful lot of what they were learning. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but it was just so not what was required in the industry. And today, as we chat, there's over 4 million open cybersecurity jobs around the world. And I think that's probably a key to your success, is the fact that it's been industry-led from the point of view of identifying the skills and competencies that the people need, because they're going to be, the people that go in these courses are going to be sellable. They're going to be hireable instantly because they're in demand. So you're turning them into what's in demand, which is fantastic. I think that's brilliant and a great approach to it.
Yeah. And see, the other piece we work on as well, Paul, with industry, is If you take any organization, they might be in manufacturing, they might be in financial funds management. So there's going to be impositions on those industries through artificial intelligence, machine learning, rollout of blockchain, other cloud-based solutions. But the people working in those organizations have certain competencies. So rather than resetting the dial to zero to bring people into a cybersecurity environment, it's trying to identify those competencies and add the missing piece. They might have 40 to 60% of the competencies to be a level one cyber tech support person. It might be that they could go in and work in a cyber SOC because they already have 60 to 70% of those competencies. And we look to fill the gap.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that because, I mean, when we were developing this, the CCRO course and so on like that, we saw that it was something to complement people with existing business skills and experience. It wasn't really about somebody becoming a pure cybersecurity person from point zero all the way through. It was that augmenting pieces. It was about being able to communicate about cyber risk and about cyber tasks. So I get that completely in the space that if someone's a lawyer, they may need to know an awful lot about cyber risk. If someone's working in procurement, they may need to know an awful lot about, but they're not going to change their specialism, but they can augment it, which is fantastic.
Correct. And that's a very, very valid point, because if you look at the whole new world of compliance and regulation and company reporting, there's a whole host of C-suite people who saw cyber as the remit of IT. And look how that has changed.
Yeah, and my response to them is cybersecurity is CEO's responsibility. That's the CEO, not the CISO, and the board are accountable. And that's the reality of it. And it's good to see that that education program, that ecosystem that's on offer will be able to bring those people in by osmosis to augment their skills. I mean, that's really, really good, because I think that there's a certain parts of the cybersecurity area, and I know you've mentioned things like Cisco there, which is really good, that might be for the pure practitioners of cybersecurity, that they want to go down a path and they want to work in a SOC or they want to be a pen tester, whatever it is they want to do. And that's fantastic. And they can work in IT security. But there's the business leaders, the people that affect policy, change, compliance, that are involved in the strategy of businesses. All of those people need to be able to adopt those skills that they'll get from those courses. And it sounds like, you know, and even from when I looked at that, there's a great infographic you guys have up on your website. And, you know, it breaks down all the different levels. And you can see that there's somebody at all different levels of their career path that they can go in. So I tip my hat to you. It's a really good offering and a place to be. But look, we talk maybe a little bit about you and how you ended up in this place for with Technology Ireland ICT Skill Net. We can come back about how we can help people as well, maybe on that. But I suppose we've crossed paths about a decade ago at this stage when we started off and we're doing lots of work around ICTDF. And I think part of your skill base, what you brought to the table, was that you're passionate about Ireland and the industry in Ireland. And that's something I always recognized in you. And it didn't matter whether it was the cloud arena stuff or ICTTF, whatever. You were non-tribal and you became this glue of pulling people together. And obviously that's reliant on your own personal skills, your personality, but being able to matchmake, being able to bring people to the table, being the non-threatening male and being the level head in the room and all that good stuff. But how are you dealing with that now in COVID? Because you're stuck behind a little camera. And how are you affecting your skills? How are you augmenting your approach to your mission?
In truth, Paul, nothing has really changed, because the whole idea of an ecosystem and my footprint in it is I know 2 to 5% about a lot of things. Thanks be to God, I know the people that know the 90 plus. Yeah, and it's all about inbound inquiries. It's all about that horizon scanning. It's all about educating people. And the ICT SkillNet model is not a commercial model. So we sit in a rather unique place. So we're not trying to ram solutions or products down people's throat. We're actually sitting there almost, and you might say virtually today, might have been physically 12 months ago, you know, having the same type of conversation. What is your business strategy? How are you trying to align your human capital strategy to your business strategy? Where are the gaps? Where do you need to be? If this is a magic wand, where do you want to be in the next 18, 24, 36 months? And how can we help? we're not suggesting we have all the answers. The answers are elsewhere within the wider ecosystem in a lot of cases. But if we can spin up those conversations and step back, people are happy. People have a qualified, kind of trustworthy partner that they refer to that can, you know, broker that initial handshake and let normal commercial activity unfold on the back of that.
Okay, so you guys have pulled together this fantastic ecosystem, this way of helping people get educated, develop their careers, help businesses educate their people when there's such a demand for these kinds of skills as well. That's all hugely laudable. But what challenges do you meet in doing that? I mean, Ireland is famous for the begrudgers, the tribalism, the, oh, when we weren't doing that, you're trying to move in on our territory. Are they still challenges you see every day, or is... has COVID made everybody sort of all get behind the one team how do you feel that? Because it's certainly something as a business person, and I've always felt, oh, somebody thinks you're encroaching on the territory, they mightn't collaborate so easily. Do you get challenges like that?
In fairness, yes, Paul, they're there. They're in every walk of life. No matter what you do, or you park your car the wrong way and outside somebody else's house or whatever it might actually be. But the reality of it is that we are going into a much more open, collaborative society. If you look at the European agenda, which we do have a seat at some of the tables there, like with the European Cybersecurity Organization and other such entities, Europe itself is way behind the Far East and the US in a lot of areas around innovation and other areas of technology. And unless we open up our minds and open up and maybe take down the barriers to engagement, we're going to actually struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, Ireland, if you look at it now, yes, it was always an island, but it's actually a little bit more remote mentally from Europe post-Brexit. What are those challenges? We have to kind of adjust as to where we're actually going. Has COVID accelerated that? Has Brexit accelerated it? Or maybe has just the infusion of technology as a foundation stone, as a utility, that it's now there for everybody to use, regardless of what sector you're in or who you are. Like, you know yourself, going back to 2010, 2011, you know, cloud was something got to do with weather, yeah, and we had all those jokes about it at the time. But if you look in the last 8 months, look at the adoption of cloud and the acceptability of cloud, even by certain naysayers, certain enterprise environments. Look at the rush to some of the platforms that are used day in, day out by companies to keep their business going. I think there's a big mindset change as to what is now doable. And the resistance that might have been there is coming down bit by bit, because nobody...
The catalyst then, you know, the fact that we're being forced to accelerate digital transformation projects, that we're taking on innovation, all of those things because of COVID, and our business models have changed and how we deal with our clients and everything changes, that we're embracing all of that. Are you fearful with any of that around the morality and ethics of how we're teaching some of this stuff? And I'm minded of the fact that we often talk about, talk quite significantly around my fear of us not understanding the ethics and morality of the technology that we're using. And when we look at, say, for example, countries like Israel, who are superstars of cybersecurity, who are essentially, quote unquote, grooming in a positive way, but identifying children in a very early age who have a propensity for working in the world of cybersecurity, skilling them, bringing them out, conscripting in the army, and then at 22, 23, when they're pushed out, they're into the industry, that has had a huge effect on the cybersecurity industry in Israel. But what about the ethics of how the technology is involved? Is there any plans, is there any groups that are looking at the humanity of this technology? Keep in mind that probably the number one program on Netflix at the moment is about Twitter and Facebook and all these guys who are at the top of these things and said, you know what, we feel really bad about what we've done. We brought out all this technology and, you know, we regret the way it's being developed.
So in answer to that question, Paul, if I allude to our master's program in artificial intelligence and AI, we've three iterations of it at University of Limerick, at NUIG and at DCU. And in those master's programs, there's a dedicated module within a semester all on the ethics.
Okay.
So again, to the earlier point and to your recent point, the drive by industry that there's recognition that ethically, you know, the brand can be killed overnight. And we've seen examples of that because of poor practices. Yeah. So the ethical side is beginning to creep into the technologies from a learning point of view. It's there in some of the technologies because obviously there are certain technology providers that have built such mechanisms into their platform. Mm-hmm. But then again, we've had the other issue whereby the use of camera-based technology and CCTV and, say, a border security and how images were not being used appropriately as such, or the assumptions models and the algorithms were making certain assumptions that were classifying people incorrectly. Mm-hmm. So there's a journey of the technology, of the methodology, and obviously of the learnings as well, that have to somehow or other come to this crossroads quite quickly.
And it's on the radar. It's now being dealt with, which is brilliant to hear as well, because that's what we would feel out in industry as well, that we see a lot of the people coming to the table and you don't want them just to have the skills, but actually understand the impact that technology may have. So, and they're great examples that you gave. Look, in relation to what you guys are doing, I mean, you mentioned there, and I know from knowing you personally, that you've done quite a bit of travel over to Europe at the different areas in the work that you do around promoting technology in Ireland and building that ecosystem that you've developed today. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's that like at the moment? Are we at a 2 and it should be or could be a 10? Is it as strong as it could be? Where are we on that journey as a country?
In truth, it's a difficult question to answer, Paul, because we have an unusual ecosystem here in the sense of the large number of multinational companies and the domain expertise that they bring. And like, if you go back to the early 90s and you remember what happened in Galway with the demise of the digital factory there from a manufacturing point of view, but look at the step out into medical devices that unfolded on the back of that knowledge that all those people had built up working in the technology sector. So we find ourselves always punching above our weight, in all honesty, because like right around the country, we have these clusters of expertise in biopharmacam and medical devices. If you look at the recent growth of automation and, say, automated vehicles down in Limerick, you know, and all the IoT stuff, which, again, everything we talk about has layers of cybersecurity to be built into it as well. If you look at a national level, you know, raise your head, look above you, look at the airspace that we have control over. Look at all the telecommunication pipes to and from the Isle of Ireland connecting Europe and the US as well. So there's a lot of expertise in Ireland to maintain all of this. There's fantastic centres of excellence. And in a lot of cases, they may not be as obvious to the ordinary person as such. As in, oh, I wonder what goes on in that building. Oh, what's going on behind those closed doors as such. But across Europe, there is a lot of respect for what the Irish government and its state agencies have achieved in landing these companies, in building this capability, in building the supply chains that support them as well. And bear in mind, a lot of European suppliers feed into it as well. So Yes,
you make a good case there. I mean, like, I often think that sometimes when I look at it from a high level, I see Europe has all these great aspirations and very macro level kind of stuff. And should we as a country be syncing up with that, or simply should we just be continuing to be successful and be more successful at what we're doing? And if it syncs, great. And where it has to sync up, of course, it should and does. But we're not being driven by the European agenda. From that perspective, because we're so unique in the...
But I think to that point, Paul, you must remember there's a certain agility that the Irish have always been capable of enabling. You know, we came out of a decade in the 1950s with the Whitaker White Paper and a direction as to what could be achieved. And you look at it 70 years later, look where we are. Yeah. Look what has been achieved. Mm. Look at... You know, everything from the aviation leasing business, which I know you do an awful lot of work in consulting with those companies and helping them on their journey. If you look at the back office functionality in global business services that has grown up, and this is even with the pharmaceutical companies, the Pfizers, Novartis's of this world. And again, we have reacted to that by building programs for them to continue to grow those centers of excellence so that when they go back to their motherships for further funding, they have some USPs that other countries around the world where there are subsidiaries do not have. Also as well, it's very important to your earlier question. We need to go to Europe to understand best practices. We need to find the uniqueness. We need to find stuff. And I use the word stuff because there's so much of it out there. And can we bring this back home? Can we implement it here? Is there a new way of doing something? Is there a better way? Can we add additional value to the companies in the different ecosystems that we play in? But like everything else, Paul, you know, we as a Technology Ireland ICT SkillNet, the irony of it is we're providing all this education for individuals and companies and so on. But we ourselves need to keep constantly educated, because unless we stay relevant, we might as well pack up and go home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. And the reason I was asking those questions was getting to that underlying point about you know, I think one of the negatives generally in the Irish side is we're so tribal and we keep things. So I'm trying to work out, do you find that the businesses are playing with other businesses and other companies on a wider spectrum? Of course, there's a layer of them that do across in North America, Asia, Europe, and so on of that. But in general, how are we interacting, working, learning from other countries, other centers of excellence around the world, and not just being successful in our own back garden? So it sounds like that's pretty much there and developing.
Yeah, and like you have to take your hat off, say, to Enterprise Ireland and the work that they've achieved over the years in helping companies scale beyond the Isle of Ireland as such. And also, you know, in the reverse psychology to the digital example, IDA, and bringing these companies in, because the days of bringing in a Facebook, Google are long gone. So they're bringing in really interesting smaller companies. Smaller subsidiaries who, to a certain extent, have all the traits of an SME. So they're much more agile, they're much more open, they're much more flexible. They want to land, they want to collaborate, they want to reach out and drive their own business models. Like the government has stepped in with its innovation funding as well. So they're trying to get academia, SMEs and multinationals to work together under the Disruptive Technology Innovation Fund. So they're driving collaboration that way. We have the whole Horizon 2020 framework, as we're still in 2020, which will be replaced by the Horizon Europe one, a 7-year program, which it suggested there's about 102 billion of European funding coming on stream to drive collaboration between all the countries and the different actors within those countries. So I think for anybody today, the concept of being siloed, the concept of
closed mindset.
Yeah, and I think like it's a comment you've often used yourself. Everybody will suffer a cyber attack. Yeah, in most cases, it's happened 9 to 10 months before you actually realize.
Well, as I always say, there's no borders on the internet. So that's it. Like, I mean, we're all in one playing field on the internet when it comes to delivering services and offering them and so on with that. And then obviously the challenge has been able to break that down to local legislation, yeah, and protect them country by country. But no, it's fascinating the progress that you guys have made. I mean, do you think the government of Ireland could do a better job in relation to strategy around innovation, cyber, those kind of things? I know you're doing really well around the education piece and phenomenally well, but gluing it all together at a higher level, do you think a better job could be done?
Well, I'll take my hat off to Skillnet Ireland here, because they themselves are very much coming into the business support space. They are getting much more impactful in relation to the industry needs. If we look at what Science Foundation Ireland is doing and its program and its support to all these research centres, or like a classic example, Paul, would be the one that Skillnet Ireland and ourselves are involved in, which is the Centre for Research Training of Data Science. So commencing last September, we onboarded 27 PhD students, which was an open application globally. And we've augmented it this year with another 33 plus one from industry. And over a 4-year period, we will be bringing in 139 PhD students for a fast track PhD over a 4-year period to have them industry ready. But the brilliant piece about this is in the Centre for Research Training that we're involved in, we have industry partners. The industry partners are working with the PhD students. They are giving them virtual internships as we speak, but they are actually setting projects. You know, and the cohort, when I say industry, it goes beyond industry in this case, like the Central Statistics Office and others are involved in it as well. So there's new ways of Irish government agencies and Irish government mindsets that are now being deployed to engage, to understand better. And I'd like to think, you know, further up the chain, that is informing policy, where you, I, the listeners on this podcast, will be the long-term beneficiaries of. And again, you know, we go back to COVID, we've seen the smart and agile responses that they made. It obviously wasn't 100%. Nothing is. You know, the first release of even any cybersecurity product will not be 100% either. You know, let's call a spade a spade. But I genuinely think, and I believe, and I have a huge hope, you know, for Ireland, one as a country, two, you know, for Irish citizens, that we will stay very much at the heartbeat of what is actually going on. There's just so many valuable assets around the Isle of Ireland. And when I talk about assets, that's obviously referring to individuals as well as domain knowledge and IP and everything else. Personally, I think we are quite fit for a purpose. I believe that whatever lies ahead, when, let's say, the global trade doors return to whatever the new norm is, Ireland will once again continue to punch above its weight.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, and I think, you know, I bring it up because there's just so much bashing, you know, of just, oh, blah, 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 the government should do this, the government should do that. But it takes people like yourself to put in that extra effort within your own roles and so on like that to make a difference. And everybody else who's working with you within that ecosystem and your team and the extended team, the academia, the industries you're dealing with, everything else like that, to absolutely make the difference. You know, it can't be down to the government to come up with strategy, implement and do all of those pieces.
But Paul, like a classic example is actually today, which is just coincidental because obviously we don't control these publications and their launch dates, but Skillnet Ireland, through its CEO Paul Healy and Minister Simon Harris, today announced a new framework called Skills Connect. Okay. And ourselves and 23 other networks. There are 70 in total throughout Ireland. We're just one of the 70. So between 24 networks, we will provide free training and access to 2,000 unemployed people before the end of the year. And it's the middle of October almost. Excellent. Yeah. So
how will that work? So let's get into the cut of this, right? If I'm unemployed or somebody's unemployed, and what can you do for them tomorrow? Where would they start with you? Where would they start with ICT SkillNet?
Yeah. So the first thing
website or what?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So the first thing they can do is they can go to a website which is has a URL called Future in Tech. So that's Future in Tech. .ie. The Future in Tech is all one word. And when they land there, they will see the opportunity to look at 7 specific skill pathways. So there's a cloud practitioner, there's cybersecurity in there, there's network security, there's even digital marketing as such in there. And in essence, they fill out an application form on the basis that they are currently unemployed and receipt of DSP payment, and they select a career path that they would like to consume. It is going into a process which closes on the 16th of this month. Once that process has concluded, they will be invited to consume a 30-hour course, which is quite straightforward in relation to, it's just checking the competencies of the individual to make sure that they're going to be able to consume 6 to 9 months of online learning.
Partner interruption as we have a quick word from our sponsors.
Cyberprism.com is a cloud-based platform that allows you to perform a cyber risk assessment across all or parts of your business, including the supply chain. It is a faster, more efficient, and a much more cost-effective way of performing assessments across your management framework. It is easy to use, and the dashboards can be leveraged by the board to make informed decisions. It produces multiple regulatory reports, including maturity roadmaps. The collaboration features allows global teams to manage cyber risks whilst maintaining social distancing. They can continually assess, mitigate, and track performance on an ongoing basis. Remember, if you don't measure cyber risk, you can't manage it. Sign up now for your demo at cyberprism.com.
And it's given the people the opportunity that, we all tick a box and say, yeah, I can do that. Maybe not. It's not necessarily for everybody.
Okay. So there's a window of opportunity here till October the 16th to jump on board this, get evaluated to see whether you are a fit. Not just from the point of view, are you really unemployed and all that good stuff, but do you have the core competencies or ability or nature for whatever that subject is you picked? So there's a sort of an evaluation almost, a soft evaluation to find out that they would fit the course.
Indeed, Paul. And then immediately after that, there's an aptitude test to, again, look at the pillar that they have chosen. Because as you know, the mindset required, say, in cloud and in cyber is different to digital marketing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Now I know, I'm talking to somebody who's blessed in all three, but that's it. The good old north side of Dublin schooling. Yeah,
go on now with that, would you?
So once they get through that, they are invited onto one of the pillars.
Okay,
and that pillar is then delivered online over a 6 to 9 month period, depending on the contents within the pillar.
Okay.
But they will actually have access to an industry mentor every week,
right,
to help them, to guide them. So again, here's a clear indication of people in industry, in the wider ecosystem. And maybe it ticks a box on their CSR agenda, where they have to do 20, 30, 40 hours a year.
Yeah.
Maybe it's ticking a box on their own personal wish list. But we have hands up all over the place to come in and mentor on this.
And that's career development and also around the subject matter itself and trying to steer them through the course itself.
Yeah, so we will not steer them through the actual contents of the course, or the mentor will not, because the model and the online model that they will take the tutorials from, so they'll be giving X number of weeks to consume this piece, sit an exam, then move on to the next one. So all the support within those modules is already built in.
Okay.
Yeah. So they will go on a journey And hopefully at the end of it, they will come out the far side. But what we're after doing as well, Paul, we're underpinning it with project management Prince 2 skills at a reasonably introductory level. And then the other piece, which is the very important piece as well, is they will be assisted in their own personal development around CV creation, interview techniques, and everything else. Okay. Because we want to give them the confidence as well as the certification that they ideally have generated by taking the different pathways to go out to industry to get that job.
This is amazing. So this is essentially a sausage machine you've created where the unemployed person goes in at one end and they come out and they're completely hireable at the end. And they're polished, any of the skills, any of their confidence is boosted around how they present and sell themselves on CVs and interviews and everything else like that. They can speak to real people in the industry and find out what it's really like, because the job might sound sexy, but it could be as boring as hell. And they might figure that out pretty quickly in talking to a mentor, whatever. They've gone through the pieces on the aptitude test. But then it gets into the course itself. So if they were unemployed, how do they live when they're on this course? Do they get paid?
Well, they're still entitled to their DSP payments. Okay. And what all the parameters around that enable them to do, which I'm far from an expert on.
Yeah, but I get it. But it's not like they're giving that up and they're going into to full-time education. They're given the opportunity to reskill or upskill and to pivot into a new career or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. So if you look at it from a policy point of view, from a government point of view, they have high unemployment at the moment. All these inroads are going to reduce that percentage. Mm. The money that the government is investing, in theory, comes back quite quickly through payroll taxes, consumption taxes. Mm. So the ROI is fantastic as a model. And this is where across Europe, the SkillNet Ireland model is hugely respected, because no other country can deliver this the way we do it. No other country can actually frame themselves, because in certain cases, parochialism, like if you look at how different countries are set up by cantons and regions and sub-parliaments and everything else, there's that agility in Ireland to make what is obvious easy to do.
To make it happen. So that website is futureintech.ie, is that what you said?
That's correct. Tech.ie. Yeah, applications and, open to the 16th of October.
So if anyone's listening and they know somebody or they are unemployed and they want to kickstart into a new career and be getting going and make themselves very sellable and very employable, then that sounds like a great path to go on and go to futureintech.ie. Dave, over the years, I've always seen you somewhat of a patriot. It seems like what you do for Ireland and not so much for a paycheck, I must say. I know we rib each other quite a bit, but I do mean that that you do some great work, and it seems that your mission is more about what you can do and what you can give back, which I think is why you're so good at your job. So now it's your turn to blush. But no, I mean it genuinely and sincerely, because I mean I think, like, you know, you're no spring chicken. Judging by your photograph on LinkedIn, I know you made your Holy Communion. And there goes the ribbing now. We've started the slagging already. But no, I mean, how do you keep up to date? You've got everything off the top of your head there. The acronyms, the jargon around all the courses and the funding and blah, blah, blah. How does Dave Feenan find the time then to upskill himself, to keep himself in the loop on all of these things, all of the innovation, all of the different product names, everything else like that? How are you doing that?
Oh, I get accused, Paul, of having a PhD in delegation. I have a fantastic team.
You can't delegate this, Dave. I mean, and you have... You're here doing this when you could probably be doing other things as well. You've got the passion for the subject and everything else like that, and the mission. Do you use audiobooks? I know you're not going to be deep into the tech and stuff, but you understand how all the pieces fit together. I mean, how are you upskilling? How are you keeping yourself skilled? Apart from the interactions.
Yeah, I think there are four pieces to that. And if you look at it, like our own team and my colleague Susan, who, you know, is the operational brains and such to make everything happen in the background, allows me to a certain extent to move to a more strategic level. So by default, you get involved in conversations with senior people in industry. we go back to the earlier parts of the conversation about the horizon scanning, the needs analysis. So you get insights on a day-to-day basis from a whole host of people as to what's going on, and something can trigger in that conversation. Mm-hmm. So what do? Do you follow up on it? Do you see if somebody else has the same challenge or opportunity? You start mapping it out, and then you start to get a little bit of a domain expertise on it. And you utilize anything and everything. So that can be reading white papers. It can be using digital platforms or looking at TED Talks. But in all honesty, Paul, you go back to the days of Ireland and the old Shanachie, the stories that are handed down.
Yeah.
The best sources of knowledge are...
You're listening to people you trust, informed people that are sharing that knowledge with you, and you're picking up from that, and that instant level of trust with the knowledge you're being handed. You don't have to go and verify, so to speak. This has been great and very informative, and I think very useful to the listeners in understanding how technology around ICT can help them, and certainly how not just unemployed, but how it can help people at all levels of the career and all stages of the career as well, and what they could do. And we've been working with your organization for the last couple of months in support of that certified cyber risk officer course that you're offering, and found you guys are exactly what you say in the tin, very professional, very motivated, and there to help the people who are going on those courses, make sure it's the most appropriate thing, handhold them through the journey, all that good stuff. So again, I'd add that into the listeners to say, what you're saying isn't spiel, it's the real deal. Stuff at the end of the day, but more from the point of view, look, as outside of your business persona, I've been asking people on these podcasts some other kinds of questions, and one of them I throw to somebody this morning was, if you were given a free billboard tomorrow in the middle of a Collins Street, and given what's going on in the world with racism, division, coronavirus, misinformation, just the holy state of chaos that we sort of live in the turmoil and discombobulation that we live in at the moment, what message would you put on that billboard?
We give you choice.
Very good. Yeah.
And that wasn't a prepared question by any manner of means. No. So anybody listening, we create choice. We create opportunity.
Yeah.
And that is saying, this is here if you like to embrace it. That's over there. Is that for you? If you want to do something on innovation, yes, we have a program for that. If you want to do something at a very low level of understanding AI, and with the support of SkillNet Ireland, with the support of IBEC, who are our sponsors, and Una Fitzpatrick in there, we are coming to market soon, Paul, with a dedicated program for women in AI. Now, we didn't go out and create that. That was the Women in AI Network in Ireland coming to us.
You see, we were going so swimmingly along there, and then you had to bring up Women in AI, because this is actually a little bug of mine. I mean, I don't know why there has to be women in anything. And I mean that from the point of view is there's AI. Why have women in this, women in that? Are we not calling out especially specific topics like that, or do you feel it is necessary that there's extra support or focus required on a certain gender in the industry? And I'm not saying I'm right or wrong or you're right or wrong, but I'm just intrigued by so many of these things that get labels on women in this, women in that. Given what my current status, would it not be ginger people in cyber? And I'm not being frivolous about this. I'm most of the people I'm teaching on a cyber risk officer course at the moment, the gender balance is probably female, and the level of competency in the women on the course is phenomenal, and it seems to be phenomenally higher than the men on the course, and it seems that there may be their minds, their aptitude, their focus seems to lend itself to that holistic syllabus, if you like, of all the different kinds of areas of cyber risk, from dealing with procurement, dealing with regulations, dealing with people, dealing with tech, all of those things. Is that the need to have specialist groups like Women in AI? And I can be convinced on this because I don't, you know, I just question it. And I poke at it sometimes when I see it and go, are people just saying that for the sake of it? Or is this something that is necessary? Do we need to distinguish genders in technology?
No, what we need to do is encourage them. And you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So in fairness, the ICT sector has been male dominated since, you know, we go back to the 50s.
Absolutely. And you know, we ran women in cybersecurity at the EU cyber summits time to time, way before it was sort of a fashionable thing to be talking about. We've been doing it for the last 10 years.
But you see, today, Paul, you need to look at when we go back to the earlier part of our conversation where we spoke about the ethical side.
Yeah.
So unless you have qualified people who represent all the ethical aspects that can be programmed into different algorithms, we miss a beat.
Sure.
So if you look at, say, a software team of the future, will it be software engineers? Will there be a behavioral scientist on that team? Will there be a ethical person on that team?
I get it. I mean, like 100%. I mean, and this is, again, something that I've been beating the drum about, you know, all our software. It's almost digital hegemony if all our software is being developed in the United States with the tort of law there around privacy. And it's basically 20 or 30 really rich white kids who are designing out the software that we then adopt, billions of us around the world. And this is obviously part of the mainstream debate now that's going on around technology. And, you know, I can see how you say about encouraging. That's the magic piece. It's encouraging them to say, you know, this is for you. Because I know the Cyber Risk Officer course, as I say, it's phenomenally successful. And I'm intrigued as much as anything else by how it seems to be more women are interested in the course, taking the course to augment their own skills and their own roles within those. And they're just doing extremely well on it, just unbelievably. I'm not saying that in a condescending way, of course. I'm saying that in a way that I'm going, this is brilliant, and to be encouraged, and absolutely. And it's a bit sad that we have to point out to encourage women to come onto these things as well, maybe, but it might be the reality.
Yeah, but I think, you know, in society, there are certain stereotypes. We're actually trying to bring the barriers down.
Yeah.
But if there's a cohort of people, regardless of what the classification is, that are interested in doing something that is going to feed the Irish talent pipeline in the tech industry, yes, we're going to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're going to go and help. As such, yes, we're going to try and integrate them in. Because, like, you look around, there is the Block W cluster, which is blockchain for women. So it's there are many examples where, yes, they might find a comfort level of being in a collective together. Yes, they could have maybe similar challenges because, like, say, especially in today, there is that work-life balance, trying to manage kids, the schooling, and so on. So a group of them coming together, there can be an ease and things can actually happen as such. So we at the Technology Ireland ICT SkillNet have to kind of say, you know, all doors are open, all like as industry, as a network group, as a cluster, come and talk to us and we see what we can actually do.
Brilliant.
You know, at times we have to say no to something because, yes, there might be some ideation, but it doesn't resonate with the rest of industry or it doesn't have traction as such. And you know that in your own business model, not every idea you come up with is necessarily a deliverable, or it's not, in your case, commercially sound to see it through. And you take the journey you went on yourself with your Cyber Prism solution. You know, that wasn't something that you got up on a Monday morning and was deliverable on a Tuesday. You spent a long, long time bringing all of that together. Yeah, as such, and you know, credit where credit's due, it is the success that it is. But look at the number of different people, the different job roles, the different job categories that they fulfill that are embracing that solution.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, you might have ended up selling it into Joe in company A, but below Joe, there are many, many different people with different mindsets, different backgrounds that are consuming those products. And it's the same with the learnings. And all it's going to do is it's going to feed into a talent pipeline, a wonderful enlarged ecosystem, because ultimately, it's all about Brand Ireland.
Yeah, and no, totally. And it gets back to you being the patriot. You're always pushing the country, which I love about you. And I mean, the thing is, I mean, I'm in furious agreement with you about all of these pieces, because I can see, for example, in our own journey, you mentioned there that we've got the Cyber Prism product. So my commercial hat on, you know, our cyber risk assessment and management tool. But also in the ICTTF, we have the education offering. And what we're seeing, totally driven by demand, like you're doing with the industry and listening to them. We've listened to the industry as well. And what they want now is learning by doing. They want us to create courses where we're teaching people how to use those tool sets to do these kind of jobs, especially with social distancing being a challenge and so on, being able to work remotely and use those kind of collaborative tools as well. So it's great to see that things are doing so well. The mission is going so well for you as well, and that you just never rest. You never seem to rest. You're pushing constantly to make things better and strive to better. So I do admire you for that, Dave. I really do, sincerely. And look, it's at this stage of the show, before I go on to the last little piece, I'll just ask you a little personally a question. Was about your own family, do your kids, do they work in technology?
Directly, yes, and indirectly surrounded by it.
Yeah. So, and what would they describe your job as? Could they describe your job?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. It's a question I've been asking guests on the podcast, and it seems that none of the kids can describe what their job is, which is I would agree to that as well.
It's what I do. You know, in fairness, if you ask my wife, she'll probably shrug her shoulders as well and then say bit of this, it's a bit of that. It's not your straight line bank manager or car salesman as such, you know. And I could turn the tables to you, to any of your listeners today, and say, you know, business cards, job titles, email signatures.
This is a brilliant segue, because the last part of the podcast is called Turn the Table. And it's when I go, turn the table, turn the table. You get to ask me a question. So throw something at me, and then I'll thank you and we can conclude. So throw any question you want at me, and we'll go from there.
So I suppose, Paul, a lot of people may not know that you have a love for dogs.
I think most of them do. If they've come across me, they know I'm nuts about dogs. And I've got two of my hairy babies left out of five. They've been on a journey, but I believe one of them is probably the oldest living of its breed, pretty much in the world at this stage. But I love them. They keep me sane. They're a passion. They take me out of the darkness of some of the things I come across in my day-to-day work when I'm investigating crime or really nefarious and dark pieces as well. That they give me a piece of humanity, if you like, and ground me, as does the family piece as well, on that. But as we throw that out, I know that you're into model cars.
Indeed, yes.
So tell me about the model cars, and I'll tell you about my Lego collection.
Well, it started about 40 years ago of collecting die-cast cars from a scale of 1 to 8, 1 to 12, up to 1 to 24. So, yeah.
And do you have a man cave, or are they just all around the house, or how are they handled?
Oh, with a grandchild around, they are under lock and key.
Ah, very good. Very good. Good thinking.
As the man would say, it's probably as near as I'll ever get to a Ferrari or a collection of Ferraris. So I'll hang on to them in their native state. So let me throw a back at you, Paul, and maybe a pertinent question in today's day and age. And, you know, you spoke about the love of dogs, and of late we have seen a unimaginable increase in dogs being stolen. So for anybody listening in on this, is there any insights, or is there anything on the other side of the line that you have been able to track or add?
Topic that I'm ridiculously passionate about, but not just dogs, but animals in general. And one of the things I did late last year was I went over to keynote speak in Singapore about the animal trafficking that is going on. Because, see, the thing is, when it comes to cybercrime, Dave, a lot of people think it's, oh, they just stole my email address, they stole my password, they stole some money. And all of these things are bad, right? And they're a pain and a nuisance and all that, and to be dealt with. And they can have even darker consequences, those things. But the people who are behind that activity are also behind child trafficking, human trafficking, organ harvesting, and trafficking of animals, right? And then you look at that piece and you go, okay, so there's endangered species and even endangered flora fauna, which I don't get that passionate about that, but about the animals I do. A pangolin, for example, is the most trafficked animal in the world. They're trafficked on the dark web. All of this ecosystem that's used by cyber criminals is used for these older kind of crimes, if you like, to do this kind of things. And when it comes to the local crimes of what's going on around dogs, there's two main groups involved in it in Ireland. I have contributed quite a bit of time and effort into identifying and disrupting their network and what they're doing. Some of it is in relation to stealing bait dogs. So bait dogs would be the small little dogs that they use to throw to bait to the bigger fighting dogs, and so on. And then there's a whole other set of dogs which are used and they're exported off to other countries where they want them. So it's a dark area and it does get my blood rise. So I'm trying to stay nice and level as I talk about this, because it's that darkness. Look, when I talk about these things, I talk about cyber evil. And I talk about the fact that you mightn't think something is a crime that harms somebody, but at the other end, there is harm and hurt. If you look how people are making money from that cyber evil perspective, there's a lot of money being made showing dogfights online, and people pay online to watch the dogfights, to trade the dogs, to give tips on what to do with the dogs, to torture animals online and charge to watch those things. So it's a darkness. And unfortunately, as Tim Berners-Lee put it about the internet, it's humanity connected. And when you connect humanity, you connect evil as well. And those people are able to seek each other out, work on the negative and the darkness, unfortunately. So on a local basis within Ireland, I never take my eyes off the dogs when I'm out, even though they're 12 stone. But they're of value. Somebody just looks at them and sees euro symbols when they see them, and they're not all with their big fuzzy hearts looking at their big slobbering dogs and all the rest. And if you think about the kind of small dogs that have been stolen, they're usually from older people. It might be the only companion they have. It's a really brutal, horrible crime at the end of the day. No need for it whatsoever. It's not about trying to make a living to feed the kids. It's, you know, it's not that kind of crime where that somebody might try and defend what they're doing. It's just horrible. I would add that, but that's a part of the motivation. What we do as well in the ICTJ part, as you know, has been everything from protecting children online, the wider ecosystem. We did the counterterrorism stuff. We did all of those kind of things as well. And what we're doing around the international trade in wildlife in particular is a passion project of mine at the moment. A lot of stuff I do behind the scenes. But on that dark and sinister note, Dave, I will say this to you to sum up a little bit. You're a true patriot, as I've said now three or four times in this call, because I think that's the word comes into mind when I think of you and how you work for Ireland. You don't work for Dave Feeney, you don't work for paycheck, you work to try and give back. You had obviously had your successful career, you found yourself at a position where you could use those skills to help others, matchmake with the work you did with your previous incarnations, if you like, with the work you did with IBEC and all of those areas in bringing people together and help them. You were a catalyst in helping bringing those together, those with the need and those that could deliver on that. I thank you for everything you've done for the ICTJF and myself personally as well over the years. More power to you in what you're doing, because you don't seem to be growing tired of the missions. You're just getting better, stronger, more confident at it, and much more successful as the thing goes on. And I think Ireland needs people like you that can help take pride in what they're doing. You're giving back to the community, you're giving back to the sector, you're giving back to everything unselfishly, and I thank you for that as well. And thank you for your time today, Dave. It's been really, really good.
Yeah, you're welcome, Paul. And if I could maybe just close out for your listeners on just a couple of shouts. So Tuesday of next week, Tuesday the 13th at 11 o'clock, we have a webinar all on the Certified Cyber Risk Officer course. So again, if you go to the ictskillnet.ie website, you can see all the details there. On Tuesday the 20th, and this is the fun piece of what we do, we're hosting, which has been kindly supported by the Irish Computer Society, Renaissance, ICTTF, CRI and others. We're holding a virtual Capture the Flag event. So this is for teams of up to four people, where they can, over a 3-hour period, test themselves almost in the gamification environment on their cyber skills. There's absolutely no cost to do it. It is open to anybody. If you cannot form a team of four, just register. We'll form teams of four. You work in your own breakout rooms. And you yourself, you've been part of many of them. So the challenges are set related to the competency of that team. So for argument's sake, if, and no disrespect to anybody on the listening to the podcast, if you're a receptionist, if you're a salesperson, if you drive the forklift and you work in IT, that's a team of four. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe the person in IT isn't on the team. But the challenge,
how long does that take, Dave, for the people when they participate? They can do it all online, of course. And how long does that take? How do they engage? Can they register on the day or beforehand?
We would suggest that they register beforehand, because the portal will open 48 hours in advance of the day, so they can go in and try some of the modules and get up to speed. And it'll be everything like an image will be sent to them and there will be an inconsistency, say, in the image. So when they click on it, the image would still open, but there's actually something else hidden in the image, and all kind of that, I won't say basic stuff per se, but again, creating that awareness. And what we'd like to do then, Paul, is to leave the portal open for maybe 7 to 10 days after the event, that the teams of four can continue to challenge themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's not a competition. It's all about
it's a collaboration and a chance to test.
Yeah. And like to say to companies, you know, use these resources, send a couple of your staff on this. It'll be a little bit social. Yes, they can sit there with, you know, a beer, a glass of wine, a bit of pizza, as if it was some form of a quasi-hackathon or meetup. But because it's Cyber Month, you know, again, we've just thinking outside the box, how can we do something? How we can give something back for people to come in and play? It's open to everybody, no cost by our time. It's going to be between 2.5 to 3 hours on the evening. It starts at 5 in the evening, kind of in theory outside of core hours. Pre-sales, yeah, people work in different time zones, but to the best of our ability, you know, an area where a time, an environment where it might be socially acceptable to participate. And then obviously on the 29th of October, we have the next iteration of our certified cyber risk officer course, which the current iteration was oversubscribed. So plenty of opportunity for people to book in on that. Again, all the details are on the ictskillnet.ie website. We mentioned the future in tech. So again, if people listening have an interest in informing people who could avail of that, please do so. And you know, our master's in cybersecurity is open for applications commencing in January. So again, Paul, all I would say is like there are plenty of touch points there. You know, the ICTTF for all the years, starting when the first hosted event in the convention center, all the way through the different venues we've been to, in the Helix and, you know, the Grand and Malahide. It's all about creating opportunity, creating choice, affording people the ability to come together, to learn from one another as such. Because ultimately, the main thing is we all work in a connected ecosystem. And if you're not using it, if you're not leveraging it, yeah, you really should.
That was a great summation, Dave, and I think I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, they're all great opportunities. There's just so much there. So, look, people need to visit your website if they're interested in this area. They'll obviously get links off to the futureintech.ie website from there as well, and then start the journey with you. There's no hard sell, as you say. I think that's important to emphasize. You're not trying to sell things to people. You're trying to help people and bring them on a journey of education, make them more sellable and more appealing to the employers, because employers have literally specified what they want, and you guys are turning them into that, which is fantastic. So that's my nutshell of it, if you like. So look, Dave, thank you so much for your time in this episode, and I really do appreciate it. It's been very engaging, and I've learned a lot about what you guys do and everything else like that. I hope our listeners find the same, and they can find out more at the websites we've mentioned. So thanks again, Dave, for all your help and time on the call today, and best of luck.
Yeah, you're welcome, Paul. Thanks, listeners.
Thank you for listening to the Cyber Task Force podcast. We hope you enjoyed it.
Please subscribe and perhaps share it with a friend or colleague. We welcome your reviews, feedback, and ideas. We have many more interesting episodes planned, so subscribe now and don't miss out. For more information, visit icttf.org. That's icttf.org.
This episode was brought to you by cyberprism.com. Remember, you can find out more about how CyberPrism can help you measure and manage cyber risk by signing up for a demo at cyberprism.com. By visiting cyberprism.com, you can find out more about the benefits, download the brochure, watch demo videos, and even request a live demonstration with one of our experts.